Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Blue Jays trying to secure themselves of a series victory tonight in Cleveland against the Guardians after yesterday's 10-6 victory with Lauer Power on the hill. He's good. He's now well-established as a legitimate starter. He's thrown over 80 pitches. That's well and good. I think there's staying power in the Lauer Power. I think he's, considering the track record, albeit years ago, but him being 30, yeah, I think he can possibly get through a major league roster once every 5 days, five innings.
I agree.
The question I have is, can Max Scherzer do it? Not with performance, but with health, because he refuses to give us the ultimate optimism that we would love to have if after these 75 pitches in Buffalo, he was like, I feel awesome. Mm-hmm. It's all behind me. He hasn't said that.
No. Not once.
Even though he's performing well in these minor league rehab starts. So that narrative still existed for Scherzer coming off spring training before his first start of the season. But there was still this incredible excitement to see future Hall of Famer Max Scherzer in a Blue Jays uniform.
Yep.
Where is the emotion around Max Scherzer's second start in a Blue Jays uniform?
I think, and I don't think everyone will view it this way, but the way I'm choosing to go into it, and man, like, to be perfectly honest, just out of character for me, is because you have the found money of the Lauer Power Hour that you've got here, and it kind of works out that way because just the length of baseball games, like he's in there for about an hour now, so you can even do that. I don't need to look at Max Scherzer as the heaven, the earth, the moon, and the stars. I think you can look at it with hope, with excitement, but you don't need to view it as though your entire season is on the line here. And again, it's just very out of character for me. I would normally expect myself to be watching this going, oh God, it's all about to come crashing down anytime he even looks at his hand or anything along those lines. But no, I think because of what you've got out of that bullpen day start and now has just turned into Lauer, I think you don't need to look at it with the bated breath that I would have thought I would have, honestly.
No, I absolutely am looking at it
that way.
Yeah,
I know you are.
Because, yeah, you just said it. The reason the Blue Jays have been able to cobble together the Scherzer part of the rotation and not necessarily the Bowden Francis part of it, because Bowden Francis has not been good, save for like the first three starts of the season, is because Eric Lauer has been the savior in bulk role or starting role on those days. If Max Scherzer departs after another three innings tonight, what next? Because I got to say, haven't exactly been blown away by Spencer Turnbull.
No, didn't love that on Friday.
Yeah, Adam Macko maybe, but it's like, once again, you go into the unknown. And it finally feels, before we see him throw a pitch, that the Blue Jays, for the first time this season, have five viable starters. We'll see. Let's talk to Dan Shulman. How's it going, Dan?
It's going well. How are you guys?
Doing very well. So, yeah, what are your expectations for Scherzer, and how nervous are you for tonight, considering the messaging coming from him?
Yeah, I wouldn't say nervous, and this has been the messaging that Max Scherzer has been consistent with, right? He doesn't, I guess it's just, you know, we're all still kind of getting to know Max Scherzer, and I guess it's just his MO to not want to get too far out there and say, yeah, I feel great, everything's going to go great. It's like, well, I got to do it to know that I can do it. And I respect that, because, you know, he's been around the block a few times and only he knows his body and all that. So, but I think what I would love to see, first of all, is he, you know, healthy enough to stay out there and throw 85 pitches or whatever it is, and give him five good innings first time out. And, you know, he was, the results were very good in the rehab start in Buffalo. The results were very good in spring training. We all know that. But I think you got to kind of wait and see before you know. I think if he's relatively close to 100% healthy, if he can manage whatever discomfort he's feeling in the thumb, then he's going to be pretty effective. And again, you know, they have had so much uncertainty at the back end of the rotation, as you guys were just saying. Even though Lauer, you know, it was five and a third, it wasn't seven, but Lauer, and you used the word savior, Ben, and it's a great word. Like, he's been huge. These have, whatever it is, 40, 41 innings that he's given them, that's kind of come out of nowhere. And if Lauer can keep giving them, you know, five to six good innings, and Scherzer can give them five to six good innings, then they'll be in the best place they've been in all year in the rotation.
Yeah, it's remarkable what, well, I wouldn't say remarkable. It's like you add two starters to a rotation. And yeah, that's probably going to help it in a big, big way. Just in terms of the, you know, the general excitement. I mean, Dan, you've been around this team for a long time. Like George Springer signing was a big deal. Obviously, like the Vladdy contract that didn't feel the same way because he'd never left. He wasn't not here, but it was great to see it done. Just the level of excitement for this Scherzer start. Again, like not the same as the start of the season. I know it's on the road, but I mean, for you, you got 162 of these things, or maybe not quite, but it doesn't feel like another day at the ballpark. What's your level of excitement for seeing Scherzer compared to the first time out?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him in the spring a little bit, and then obviously the first time out back in March, and I think it's really cool. But honestly, I think just as big a part of it is that they're six games over 500 and might be a playoff contender here, and this start really matters. Like, if they were 32-48 or whatever right. now, I think it would feel a lot different. It feels big because this game matters. Every game matters for them right now. And you're right. If it had been at home, it's probably a little bigger. And assuming everything goes well, by the way, he'll start the opening game of the series against the Yankees on June 30th on Monday, which is kind of cool.
That'd feel pretty big.
That will feel pretty big. Yeah, it would be Scherzer and Rodon on Monday, and then Fried and Gausman on Canada Day. So come on down to the ballpark. It's going to be fun. But it is very cool. Like, as you guys know, I've been doing this a long, long time at a bunch of different places, and I'm a baseball fan. And whether it's watching Elly De La Cruz or Paul Skeens or Max Scherzer, whoever it is, I love baseball. And it is cool. But first and foremost on my mind is, and you guys touched on it, because of all the uncertainty in the rotation, like, they need this from him right now. What's the next plan? I don't know. You know, as you guys said, maybe Turnbull, maybe Macko. I mean, in a month, maybe we're having a Manoah conversation. But honestly, if something went wrong in the rotation in the next few weeks, I think they got to make a trade. And I think they got to make a trade fast because there's a lot at stake for this team right now. But hopefully that's not an issue. And hopefully he can go out there and, you know, again, give him 85 pitches.
Yeah, they need five starters. It should be a requirement. And right now they do have five starters. The bullpen has regressed slightly, and yesterday was kind of a weird game, and Paxton Schultz not being able to throw strikes was not ideal. Same with Mason Fluharty. I think it's reasonable to expect a step back from those guys who have performed well to this point. I do wonder, with all the use, especially early on, Jeff Hoffman, whether that has been part of the reason we've seen a different Jeff Hoffman the last month or so. Where do you see the actual talent lying with this bullpen? Because last year was so bad, and look, it was such a revelation, and it's still been good overall, but recently there's reasons to be a little bit curious as to where it's going to land.
Yeah, cracks in the ice, right? Like, we've seen Hoffman be great. We've seen Little be great. We've seen Fluharty be great. But they're all kind of going through it a little bit right now relative to earlier in the season. I think I've still got faith in all three of those guys. I wasn't on the game on the weekend when Hoffman pitched, but watched a little bit of it after. And Chris Black had a really good thread on Twitter, actually, about Hoffman. And I think a little bit of concern because some of the misses were such big misses and the velocity was a little bit down. He hasn't been used a lot lately, the opposite, in fact, but he did get used a lot earlier. And I don't know if there's still some lingering effects from that. You know, John Schneider was unequivocal in his comments after the game, you know, saying how much faith they have in him. Fluharty, you know, rookies go through this, and he has talked openly about more throwing, not just in games, obviously, but between games and in the bullpen and sides and stuff in the majors and in the minors. And maybe he's just kind of hitting a little bit of a mid-season wall. But this is why you need more and more and more guys. And whether, you know, Justin Brule can come back and help them, or they picked up a guy in a trade from the Marlins last night, Robinson Pena, who I didn't know anything about until I woke up and saw it this morning. He's got one major league appearance, but obviously they're interested in him as a depth piece. He's an optionable pitcher. You know, they need Jimmy Garcia back too big. Like, we talk a lot about Santander and Varsho and Scherzer, and they're all important, but we should not forget about Jimmy Garcia. They absolutely, absolutely need a healthy Jimmy Garcia back in that bullpen sooner rather than later. He's on rehab, could be back 7 to 10 days from now. So I think they've got enough guys that they can figure it out. I don't think it's going to be a lights out bullpen, but I think it should be a good bullpen. And I think for this team to make the playoffs, they don't need any part of their team to be awesome. They just need a good offense, good rotation, good bullpen. And they don't have to be great. Just I think good is good this year when you look at what's going on in the American League. So hopefully, the bullpen can just, kind of keep it together enough until they get a couple of reinforcements or guys kind of come out of the funk that they're in right now.
Yeah, good rotation, good bullpen. I don't think anybody had too big of a problem, seeing or squinting and seeing that at the beginning of the season. The offense was always the thing we were talking about, right? And they go out and they have their big splashy signing in Anthony Santander, and, they've got nothing from him because of the injury and the slow start to start the season. One of the stories of the season from an offensive perspective, but just from a baseball perspective is Ernie Clement. What you're getting out of him. When you see a player have a jump like this after, having had opportunities in seasons past, I think it's just a fair question to ask, like, how real is this? How much of the jump they've got from Ernie Clement this year are you buying?
Mm-hmm. I'm buying most of it. So he's hitting .420 or whatever over his last 23 games. So obviously that is not going to continue. He's
only Lourdes Gurriel Jr. does that for extended periods of time.
Yeah. He's hitting .310 on the season. I'm totally buying that he can make a run at .300. He destroys lefties. He's got the highest batting average against lefties in the major leagues this year, and it's not even close. And he's hitting for power against lefties. I believe he's got 4 homers. They're all against lefties. And I think he's got 17 doubles now, and 11 of them are against lefties. Now, he plays all the time against lefties, obviously, but they're only seeing 1 or 2 a week. His numbers against righties overall aren't good, but they are better lately. And I think his confidence is at an all-time high. This is not a 23-year-old first-round pick. I think Ernie's 29, and he's been released and DFA'd and all of that. He's a grinder. He's not a bonus baby or anything like that. So, obviously, the vibes are always great. The defense is really, really good, the base running and all that. And he means a lot to this team. But I'm buying that he has a tremendous amount of value on this team. And who knows? There may come a day where 7 days a week is 4 or 5 days a week. If Jimenez got hot, if Barger goes on a, another tear or something like that. But Ernie Clement has a ton of value with this team. And, it's only a year and a half ago, it's spring training of last year, where it was between him and Santiago Espinal. Who's going to make the team? Only one of them was going to make the team because there are a lot of similarities between the two guys. And they chose Clement. And Espinal has gone on to Cincinnati, and he's doing very well there. I think it's been good for both of them. But I am a huge fan of and a very big believer in Ernie Clement and his value to the team. He's not tearing the cover off the ball. He's not putting up exit velocities of 112 miles an hour. But you know what? Neither is Luis Arraez. Neither is Stephen Kwan. If you look at guys like this, they just have this innate ability to make contact and hit line drives over the infield, and that's okay. And if you hit it down the line, it's a double instead of a single. And every now and again, he gets out in front of one and hits it into the seats and left for a home run. So keep it going. Just keep playing him and let his confidence continue to grow. And, whether it's Ernie or Miles Straw's had big moments, Jonathan Clase had a big moment last night, Tyler Heineman. When you look at why this team may be exceeding expectations a little bit, and I think they are a little bit, to be honest with you, at least mine, at the beginning of the year, it's some of these guys, who weren't in the big three or weren't in the middle of the order, guys like that, who have really helped. Now, it helps, obviously. Springer's had a big bounce back year. Kirk is having a big bounce back year. Bichette, obviously, having much more of a season than he had last year. All of those things are very important as well. But, Clement, Heineman, Straw, Class A, all of these guys are helping out as well.
Yeah, and all those guys playing good defense, too, right?
Yeah, Lucas, too. I should mention Nathan Lucas as well. He's had big moments also.
Yeah. We didn't mention Andreas Giménez in there because the offense has been wanting, say, for the month of March. But he made, I think, the infield defensive play of the year for this team yesterday. Dan, is there anything else that compares to what he did going up the middle?
I mean, I said it in the moment on the call, that's as good a play as you can see a second baseman make. I don't know what else a second baseman can do that would be better than that. If it's the same play for a shortstop deep in the hole, yeah. The 5-6 hole, it's an even better play because the throw is longer. But, and then right in the aftermath of the play, I said to Joe on the air, I don't know what's more impressive, the stop or the throw. Fact he got back to his feet that quickly and fired a bullet to first base, to Guerrero, to get the out. Not that anybody would expect any different, but you know, it's good to see he doesn't take the struggles of the plate out into the field with him. I mean, with the defense is extraordinary. The base running is excellent. You just need the bat to get going a little bit. But they had some, you know, to get back to Clement for a sec, he had one really good and another pretty good defensive play back-to-back in a big spot later in the game. And this is a part of the DNA of this team. But it's good to see Jimenez doing that. I don't necessarily advocate for him to be playing 7 days a week right now. Last night they sat out Barger, played Jimenez against a lefty. You know that Clement's going to be at one of the two spots. But, you know, he's going to have to probably earn his way into everyday playing time because the bat has not been going. But when you're getting that kind of defense, especially if you've got a ground ball pitcher on the mound, like, you want to have him on the field.
Yep. And it could be the difference in a game in which your opposition commits three errors. I know you were kind of busy watching the Blue Jays game. I was, when the game felt like it was out of hand and then not so much at the end, I was flipping back and forth between the Yankees and Reds game, and the Reds did the Blue Jays a favor with the second consecutive win over New York. Chase Burns, with an unreal start to his major league career, eventually gives up the 3 earned runs, but striking out the first five Yankees batters that he faced, the top pitching prospect for the Reds, and the second round pick from last year's draft, the same first round that Trey Yesevich was picked in, not second, but in the first round. Dan, like, is that proof of concept? And I know Burns just tore up the minor leagues as well, and Yesevich's second start in Double A wasn't as spectacular as all the starts in Vancouver were, but, like, should people be on alert for Yesevich being in the major leagues after, you know, some of his draft mates have already reached the major leagues?
I think it's possible, and not many guys get to the majors the year after they're drafted, obviously. And like you said, Burns was the second pick. Yesevich was the 20th, and I didn't see any of the game last night, but I did watch about a minute and 20 highlight pack this morning, and I think in my hotel room said wow out loud about two or three times. Yeah. Watching him. Like, you see the first strikeout, I think it was Grisham, like a hellacious 92-mile-an-hour slider. Yeah. Hellacious. And then you see 99 to strike out whoever the next guy was. And it's like, okay, I've seen enough. We're good here. You know, like, and you can see that. And, I mean, he's got tremendous, tremendous talent and ability. And that's obvious. So Yesevich, I don't think it's a 0% chance, but I don't think it's a 50% chance. And a couple of things will dictate it. One is, obviously, he's got to do very, very well as he continues up the ladder. And as you guys may know, I was on vacation a little bit, so I might be a start behind. But I believe in his last one at Double A, it didn't go great. So no, I don't know when. I think he might be pitching tomorrow is his next one. I'm not 100% sure. So, you know, you got to watch him start by start. There's going to be an innings cap on him, too. Like, they're not letting him go six or seven innings down in the minors, you know, first year out of college and all that. So you got to monitor the innings and the pitches and the success that he is having. And the other thing is, what are the needs of the big club? Like, you know, In 3-4 weeks, we could be talking about him more realistically. We could be talking about, hey, Alec Manoah's at Buffalo right now. We don't know. You know, when you come back from as serious a surgery as Manoah's had, you just never know until you know. And the timeline feels August-ish, but we don't know exactly. We could be talking about, hey, Merrill Kelly's a Blue Jay. Like, we don't know what's going on. A lot of things could happen here. So, but you know what Yesevich is doing, and I know this isn't going to be for this year, but guys like Cal Steven and Johnny King, for people who follow the Blue Jays farm system, on the pitching side last year was an absolute disaster. Injury after injury after injury to key guys, whether it was Tiedemann or Barriera or Marutis, and you guys know all of this stuff. So, but for people who don't follow all that closely, as bad as last year was in the system on the pitching side, is as promising and exciting as this year has looked. They've got good stories. They've got guys coming back, and they've got this group that they drafted last year, Yesevich, Steven, and King, who are all off to, you know, really interesting, impressive starts in their minor league careers. And I've always maintained the best thing any organization can do is develop good starting pitching, because look how expensive it is to go out and get starting pitching, right? Yeah, I mean, you're paying $15, $20 million for guys who, you know, might be middle of the rotation starters because it's so scarce out there. So, back to Yesevich. Let's see. Let's why don't we revisit in about 4 weeks and see what the world looks like. But you know, maybe they would, if they needed him and if he was doing well, maybe they bring him up as like a 2-3 inning reliever in September. You know, rosters expand only by two. It's not like it used to be. But, you know, maybe he's just a little extra push at the end of the year. But they got to monitor his innings and make sure he stays healthy as well, right? You don't want any kind of setbacks.
Nope. It would be nice to have options, which may be down the road for this Blue Jays team as it stands right now. They kind of need Max Scherzer to be able to take the ball every 5 days. It starts tonight in Cleveland. Dan, appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
It will be fun. I have a feeling there will be a lot of eyeballs on this one tonight.
Oh, yeah, no question. See you, Dan.
See you.
Dan Schulman. Yeah, the whole thing is supposed to be that not everybody's in the major leagues that you've developed from a pitching perspective. Some of them are performing, not even like blowing the doors off in AAA, but like performing well enough that you can see a world in which maybe they're not even starters, they're relievers. And I know Mason Fluharty arrived and he is that. It's like the guy. And he was not a nothing prospect. He's, I think, third or fourth round pick. But yeah, what you're supposed to have, and it may not even be this year. Like, Yesavage is the guy that's already in AA. And I know Adam Macko's in AAA, but he was not drafted and developed guy. Like, the drafted and developed guys, maybe next year, maybe the year beyond that, like, some of those guys that Dan mentioned that are performing well in the low levels of the minor leagues, they're in AAA.
Yes.
And not all of them are in the major leagues. Maybe there's so many performers at the major league level that they can't break through, and it's not because they're not performing. It's because there's too much talent at the major league level, and those guys are, wow, what a great fallback option to go to them.
You're talking crazy right now. This is a team that we've had trouble having one guy as like a quad A guy down there, and you want a whole, I agree with you. That's the way you should be trying to do it. It just feels like that is genuinely not allowed in Blue Jays land, and as great a story as Yesavage is, it's important that he's not the only story. That's kind of been the problem, right? It's like, hey, there's Alek Manoah down there, and he comes up and does the thing. It's like, hey, here's the crown jewel of Ricky Tiedemann. It's like, okay, it's not working out for him because of injuries. Who's next? Nobody. So you don't want to get to the point where it's Yesavage and nobody beyond him. So I think it's important to have, and also just great job by the Blue Jays of having a prospect named Steven and one named King as well. I really, really enjoy that.
Yeah, and there's another guy named Gage Stanifer. These are some good names.
I would love to hear Schulman like really just like pronunciate on a like, and Stanifer strikes out the side. Oh, it'd be wonderful. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, it's good alliteration.
Yeah.
Anyways, those guys aren't necessary because the Blue Jays have Eric Lauer, who I believe in, and Max Scherzer, who, is healthy enough to at least give it a go at the major league level. That's right, though. It's like, it does feel like, I not that he's being disingenuous, but it does feel that Max Scherzer, he's the type of guy that's going to under-promise and over-deliver when it comes to his health, which is a smart way to go about it.
It's probably the way you should. I, in my life, have generally been the opposite of like, I feel so good. And it's like, you're actually very decrepit. Don't say that out loud. So, no, good job by him. When you can do the opposite of me, you're living the dream. There was one other thing from that Dan said there that gave me flashbacks to another era of Blue Jays-dom. When he talked about he didn't know what was more impressive, the stop or the throw on the Jimenez play, that gave me flashbacks to Matt Chapman, where we would not on any one particular play, but we would do segments of like, what's better, the glove or the arm? State your case. So it's just anytime you can harken back to an era where Chapman was playing tremendous gold glove defense, I'd like to do so.
Yeah, maybe be like more than a zero offensively.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, remember when he hit 3 home runs in a month? That was fun. Yeah. Not even that, though. Just something.
Yeah, yeah. Not too much outside of the glove. Glove was great, though.
Glove's so good. And the arm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Only the bat.
When we come back, we'll talk to Josh Cloak of The Athletic as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Maybe leaves without a first-round pick in Friday's opening of the draft. So,
yep.
I mean, I was going to say they're going to have someone there, but there is no there.
No.
They'll be, like, in their draft room.
But Jason Buchholz is going somewhere.
Yeah, he's going there.
But not there.
The teams aren't there.
Okay. Sure.
And the players?
I don't know.
Aren't there?
I don't know. Thank God Gavin McKenna's next year. Sorry, Matthew Schaefer, disrespectful probably, but
yeah.
Like, can't have this with a Gavin McKenna type.
Yeah, no, you're going to need a moment. And I assume that's, okay, so the players are going to be California, but who's going to give them the sweaters if their teams are at their own locations doing it remote?
Well, the true face of the NHL, well. Gary Bettman. Yeah, and Bill Daly.
Are they not sending anyone to the draft in California?
Well, the whole point was that they didn't want to send everyone.
Yeah, but maybe one person, maybe a representative.
You know what it should be?
Team.
It should be like NBA draft lottery stuff, where it's like, yeah, look, man, you want to send
Matt Sundin?
No, that's what I was going to say. It's like you want to send the GM, great, but like just go grab like. The next time the Knicks are in the NBA draft lottery, there's one man and one man only I want to see there. And it's Timothy Chalamet. Okay? Like, why can't Will Arnett be there for the Leafs or Commander Chris to shake their hands? Like, honestly, somebody.
Yeah,
please.
And maybe somebody will be there. Anyways.
Maybe.
This is the first kick of the can as the head of amateur scouting for Mark Leach for the Leafs.
So yes.
A long and storied career. We talked to Jason Buchla a little bit about him yesterday. We'll talk to Josh Cloak about him in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Cloak, one of his most recent pieces on The Athletic, is breaking down the 2020 draft.
Yes.
And the failure that was the 2020 draft for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Part of it, no doing of their own, just a horrible tragedy. The Rodion Amarov at 15.
Yeah, brutal.
He had never had a professional career. But boy, they had so many picks in that draft, and not a one of them is a factor. And in fact, just recently, Topi Niemela has signed in the Swedish league with Malmo. So he's out of the equation. I think for most people, he had, especially with the new fella in charge in Brad Treliving and the type of defenseman that he's into, had kind of faded into the background. But
yeah,
that's tough to get absolutely nothing from a draft 5 years ago in which you had a quadrillion picks.
Yeah, zilch. Roni Hirvonen, Topi Niemela. They got double A, the goalie down there. It's like he's playing for the Marlies. It's like, okay, you want to hold your breath on that. He had a good year last year. Yeah, it's brutal. You need to get players from your drafts. It's like, thank goodness they got Matthew Nyes the following year, because even the year before that, you got Nick Robertson and 11 games of Nick Abruzzese.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to... You don't have to turn these guys into diamonds in the rough, but like, I don't know, could I have a sapphire? Could I have a ruby? How about some nice quartz? Just something.
Cubic zirconia, like,
yeah, honestly,
look good.
Look the part, and then let us sell it to somebody else. And they're like, what? It's not beeping when I put the tester to it.
Right. Let's talk to Josh Cloak of The Athletic. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, cubic zirconium. I remember buying a ring for my high school girlfriend made of cubic zirconium and convincing her it was a diamond. She bought that for all of 3 minutes. So my luck there is about as good as luck that the Leafs had in 2020, for sure.
Yeah, not ideal. Also, like, are you going to recover? You were all over Topi Niemela. And off he goes to Sweden. That must be a devastating blow to you.
You were the first person I thought of, and I do not joke when I say I saw this news. You were the first man whose name popped to my mind outside of Topi Niemela.
Yeah, I legitimately thought when he was drafted, and like, I love that we're getting into the weeds of Leafs prospects this early in the morning. It's fantastic. So he's drafted, you know, I think he was ranked like the eighth, you know, overall, like, European skater in the draft. The Leafs get him in the third round. You're like, okay, this really feels like someone that's got real potential. He sets a record for most points by an under 20 defenseman in the Finnish league, like playing against men. And you're like, okay, like, this is real. He's named best defenseman at the 2021 World Juniors. And you're like, this is a steal. Like, this is something that Kyle Dubas can hang his hat on. And like, there's two things at play here with Topi Niemela. Sorry, there's three things at play here. First of all, my immense sadness, right? As a Topi Niemela backer,
it's the biggest
I'm
part,
never going to be able to, yeah, I'm never going to be able to get over this. Two, like, I don't want to call it a regime change, but that's kind of what it was. And, you know, the Leafs new-ish focus on, you know, getting defensemen that are built like Douglas fir trees, like, the writing was kind of on the wall there. right? And that, like, defensemen under 6 foot four in the organization were never really going to have a chance under Brad Treliving. That's fine. That's a organizational philosophy. But three, like, the thing that I kind of took away from doing the research on this story is that, like, the draft record is one thing, but the Leafs player development, they sink so much time, money, resources into their player development program. And it's something that, you know, you talk to people in the organization, they're all very proud of, but this 2020 draft suggests that maybe the player development, you know, or, you know, part of the organization, maybe it failed some players. Like, they can't add 3 inches to every player's height, right? But, you know, were there things that could have been done to help Topi Niemelä become, like, more of an NHL-ready defenseman, right? His toughness, his net presence, that kind of thing. And it's not all on them. The player, you know, deserves some fault here too. But I think when you look at 12 players, like, 12 is an egregiously large amount of players to take at one draft. And you might not get a single, like, Artur Akhimov might play a few games, but you might not get a single NHL game. Suggests there's kind of fault to be spread around here. And 5 years later, like, this isn't 2 years ago either, right? Guys from that draft playing, you know, drafted in mid rounds, they're playing NHL games now. So I guess the point with that whole story was to, you know, kind of suggest that the Leafs maybe need to look at what they're doing with player development, need to look at, you know, whether they're drafting too heavily on skill. And also, you know, as we kind of alluded to, really, you know, highlight just how wrong I was about Topi Niemelä.
Yeah, I wasn't going to put it that way, but, you know, I think it, honestly, it just lends to yourself to further credibility that you're able to put it so bluntly. Looking at the 2024 selection with the 31st pick of Ben Danford, I don't know that we need to continue to worry about, like, the over reliance on skill when it comes to the draft picks. Like you said, there's a regime change. The guys look at things in a different way. Do you worry about the pendulum swinging too far the other direction? Look, I know everybody wants to build the Florida Panthers, but I'm old enough to remember when the Leafs took Freddie Gauthier in the first round of a draft, or Tyler Biggs. How worried are you just with the complete kind of 180? The answer to me feels somewhere in the middle, where you're prioritizing skill and not just 6 foot four. What is your read on the new regime and what they're looking at or prioritizing in the draft?
So I don't know if I'm worried yet, because the Leafs have a new director of amateur scouting, Mark Leach. And I had a chance to speak, you know, one-on-one with Mark a few weeks ago. For those unfamiliar, Mark Leach spent, you know, nearly 30 years in both the Detroit Red Wings and Dallas Stars organization as a crossover scout. And, like, you'd be hard pressed to find two organizations that have had better records at the draft, especially in Mark Leach's time, than the Red Wings and the Dallas Stars, right? We've all seen that, you know, that the Dallas Stars 2017 draft is one of the best in recent memory. And Mark Leach was a big part of finding value later in the draft. Now, when I talked to Mark Leach, the thing he kept saying is, I look for skill. I look for skill, and I look for guys that have a longer development path. He was instrumental, for example, you know, in pushing hard to get Jake Oettinger. And, like, he, you know, I'm sure Jake Oettinger would have been drafted eventually, but he saw something in that player. And, you know, the people I talked to suggested that you know, if it wasn't for Mark Leach, the Stars might not have drafted Jake Oettinger. So he's got a good eye. And I think he deserves at least a few years to see what kind of class he can put together. The key that I think, and the reason I'm not completely worried for the Leafs right now, is they seem to be aware that balance in a draft class is important, right? Like, and that's where the Leafs kind of erred, is they just put too many eggs in the skill and hockey IQ basket, right? And I think you don't necessarily need to draft for positional need, but I think you do need to understand that you only have so much room for so many 5'10 guys who are fantastic with the puck on their stick, right? You need to account for different types of players filling different types of roles. And I suppose that the counter to that I know Jonas Siegel has thrown in my face a lot, is that you can find, you know, fourth line penalty killers in free agency for league minimum. But, you know, those guys do eventually end up costing too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody needs those guys. And like, you know, I'm not saying the trade was bad, but like we're talking about all summer about how the Leafs really need to add at center. Fraser Minton looks like an NHL ready center, mm-hmm. right? And they drafted him knowing he was probably like a middle six, third line guy who could kill penalties, play smart, maybe isn't going to give you 20 goals every year, but he's going to give you reliable hockey. And that's something that was missing from the 2020 class. And, you know, I think the Leafs are coming to that kind of understanding. And that's why I'm not worried yet, to answer your original question.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do want to move on to the Gold Cup stuff. Just to like quick follow up on Minton. And like, I agree with you. Like, I think that's a guy who obviously came in, played some NHL games. But there's a difference between being ready to play in the NHL and being ready to play in the second round against the Florida Panthers in a seven game series. Like, I think that when you look at like the Mintons of the world, it felt like those were the type of questions. And again, it's not to say he'll never be ready for that challenge, but I mean, go look at the ages of the rosters that we just saw. And there's not a ton of 21-year-old, 22-year-olds poking around there. So I think that'd be the only kind of pushback on that. And it's not to say don't draft guys like Minton. It's just with the state of this team right now in terms of the all-in and Matthews and everything there, I just wonder how quickly those guys can truly kind of get here to help.
It's so tricky because a few years ago, the conversation was focused on how do the Leafs find players to beat the Boston Bruins? And how did the Leafs become more Boston Bruins-esque? And now we're talking about how did the Leafs become more Florida Panthers-esque? Fine, right? Because the Leafs haven't gotten there. But there's going to be a different team that they're going to be trying to topple in 3 years when these draft picks are ready. And that's why I think Mark Leach's plan to like draft for skill, draft the best player you can find, and allow for a longer development path so that, you know, in 4 years when you're trying to beat the, I don't know, the Montreal Canadiens. I just kind of gasped there. I don't know why I used that.
Cold shiver.
I don't know. I don't know why.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. You have the most skilled player available. Hopefully one that has a little bit more size and is a little more NHL ready. So it's tricky. The draft is fertile ground for argument and debate. And I guess that's what we're doing now.
It is, and there will be some, no question about it, and the Leafs don't have a first-round pick on Friday, but they have six more draft picks after Friday's first round in California, where they will have a celebrity, I guess, putting the jersey on fellas. I don't know who that is, but yeah, the what's his name from Mighty Ducks is going to be there actually putting the sweater on
Joshua Jackson.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, maybe it is Will Arnett. Anyways, okay, I want to talk about Canada soccer because we smashed nine-man El Salvador 2-0 yesterday.
That's right.
Well, I mean, yeah. And they were down to nine men because they know their only path to victory against Canada would be to just elbow them in the face.
Which speaking of the Florida Panthers,
yeah,
honestly.
They attempted to do that. But unlike the NHL playoffs, there are, yeah, there's repercussions for your physicality in the game of soccer and multiple red cards issued. And they're off to the quarterfinals where they will play Guatemala. And if they get through Guatemala, potentially a matchup against the Americans in the semifinals here. Josh, with all this without Alphonso Davies as well, I don't think Vegas has them as the betting favorites to win this thing, but how do you view Canada as currently constructed and how important is this tournament with the World Cup just a year away?
Yeah, this is Canada's last tournament before the World Cup, so it's massively important. And Jesse Marsh has told me multiple times, Canada's head coach, that this is essentially one of the last real opportunities for, you know, guys maybe outside the top 15 to really prove themselves ready for you know, not just a World Cup roster spot, but starts here and there. And that's why Jesse Marsh has really rotated his squad a lot through three games. So I think they're still one of the two best teams in this tournament if they can really truly find their best 11 and develop some cohesiveness from that. Because, you know, through all three group stage games, we've seen different center back pairings, different forward pairings, different midfield pairings, right? And that's good because if you're Jesse Marsh, you want to see, what do I have here? Who can I really, really depend on? And you can do that in a group stage environment. But once you see Canada's best 11, I truly think they have the kind of talent that no other team in the Gold Cup has right now, right? Because every, you know, the You know, the United States is missing Christian Pulisic, fine. Mexico maybe isn't at their best right now. But Canada got buy-in from Jonathan David, Tejon Buchanan, Alistair Johnston, right? These are some of the best players in the region right now. And when you saw them really open up play against El Salvador and you saw them kind of push through a team that was literally trying to hack them to the bone, you saw their quality, right? And I think Jesse Marsh just needs to figure out who are my best 11, right? How do I kind of slow the rotation? What have I learned? How do I kind of own in on what I have? And when they get there, I think they're a better team than the United States. And I think, you know, they probably really want that rematch against Mexico after losing in the Nations League semifinals. Because I think if Canada are at their best and Jonathan David is at his best, he's probably the best player in the tournament right now. Canada should, I don't know if they're betting favorites, but they should be the best team in the tournament right now.
I think one of the bigger shockers from yesterday's game was that Jesse Marsh wasn't one of the guys that got a red card in that thing. As is a fella who seems like he's pretty combustible. Started this tournament with the two-game suspension and then was investigated for more maybe touchline violations outside of that. What's going on with Jesse Marsh? And like I'm not criticizing because it sounds good, and especially when you're talking about going back to the suspension, the impetus for it. It feels like he just had his team's back and almost like was egged on by his players to be as forceful as he was against the officials. But yeah, this is now I guess a running theme for Jesse Marsh is that he's not a wallflower.
There were so many people within Canada Soccer that were so relieved to hear and see Jesse Marsh kind of toe the company line when he was under investigation, not fly off the handle, not truly speak his mind, because as you know, we've heard with his pushback against the 51st state stuff, it doesn't take much for him to speak his mind in a way that frankly, like let's call it spade a spade. A lot of Canadians just aren't used to, right? Like,
yeah.
And so I think a lot of Canadian or, you know, people within Canada Soccer were really proud of how Jesse Marsh didn't exacerbate the situation with, you know, another possible suspension. That said, the thing that I think people need to take away here is that, you know, Jesse Marsh comes into the organization a little over a year ago, and he says, incredible athletes, really talented players with high-end potential, but this team is too nice. And I understand that's such a generic, you know, way to assess Canadians, fine. But he's coming from, in some parts, like the American soccer ecosystem, the German soccer ecosystem, where braggadocio is a currency. You have to have swagger and arrogance in your game to survive. And what he observed was that this team doesn't have that yet. They don't have that swagger. They don't have that arrogance. They're literally not loud enough, and they're a little too docile enough in the way that they deal with referees. And one of his overarching missions since taking over is to turn this team into more of like, for a comparison sake, into more of like the Florida Panthers, right? Be nasty, be hard. There's other words I can think of that we can't use on radio. And so Jesse Marsh has tried to coax some out of that by kind of being the first man through the wall and speaking his mind and being brash, but you know, making Alfonso Davies not necessarily a captain type, making him captain was an effort to get him to come out of his shell. And then he makes Jonathan David captain, an even more reserved figure. Like these are efforts to bring out the nastiness, the loudness, the brashness in Canada soccer, because he thinks that that's going to help them survive really testy matches against really good teams in the World Cup. So I think kudos to him for doing that. But you know, in the context of this last week or so, he deserves kudos for understanding that he's better on the pitch than being suspended for even more games, right?
Well, would the Americans trade Christian Pulisic for him and dump Mauricio Pochettino? Because it feels like, you know, you read Twitter, they would.
Yeah, if you guys are spending time on U.S. men's national team soccer Twitter, I'm wondering what's the more toxic environment, U.S. men's national team soccer Twitter or Leafs Twitter right now?
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm having a heck of a time enjoying Alexi Lawless's tweets after every
he's so angry
American disappointment. Good stuff. Check out Josh's latest on The Athletic. He's got a look back at the Maple Leafs disastrous 2020 draft, as well as a write-up on Canada's win over El Salvador at the Gold Cup. Josh, appreciate the time as always. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, anytime. Take care, boys.
All right, there's Josh Cloak of The Athletic.
So if Jesse Marsh can't be the guy to, like, he's got to, let's say he's got to rein it in a hair and he can't be the guy to, like, the vim and vigor, they could go back to the well. Is it not time for Sidney Crosby's annual boys trip? Like, why can't he be in the locker room or whatever they call it in soccer before this semifinal that they haven't made yet against the United States? Like, it was at Copa. We saw him in there. I've never seen a bunch of other professional athletes look so in awe. Let's do it. Who better? And it's like Crosby, yes, Canadian, nice. But who better to send the message of, yeah, nice out here. Nice to each other. Nice at a hospital visit with sick children. Mean on the ice or on the pitch in your sake.
Yeah, there's it's hard not to make a hockey comparison.
It's impossible. You're asking the team to dig in and be meaner and tougher. It's like kind of what we do in that sport.
Yeah, this sport in particular, though, it's like, it's so, and I guess the NHL too, but we know where officiating is in the postseason, that there isn't any.
Yes.
When the games matter, there's no officiating. Like, the officials are there. They have a great vantage point to watch the games.
Yeah, it's got to run around a lot, but other than that, great view.
They don't impact it. But in this sport, especially when you're talking about these CONCACAF teams who are working the officials constantly,
yes,
like, yeah, when you're the guy freaking out and putting people on high alert and you know you're not going to just take it lying down, that actually there's going to be hell to pay if you make the wrong call against Canada, that's impactful.
I love it.
It is good.
I never would have imagined having such affinity for the head coach of Canada. So, like, honestly, even when Herdman was doing it, it's like I couldn't have imagined that you'd feel this way, but I do. And yeah, him being American, but it's like he's also used that to his advantage, right? It's like when he's the guy making the anti-50 first aid jokes, it's like, yeah, it helps.
Yeah, it does. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning.